Good morning.
When we reach certain time frames, we stop and look at where we are. We talked about that a little bit last night. We look at our finances, for example. Am I as secure as I was last year? Are the stocks that I'm investing in still as strong as what they were? Is my job as secure as what it was? What about my home? Is it worth as much as what it was? Those things change. And sometimes we need to stop and look at it and say, I don't know. I was telling Richard that I heard a report that over the next 5 years, homes are supposed to increase in value instead of decrease. Number one, we got an election coming up this year. And so that always increases the economy and home values and all of that. But they say they're actually expecting a turnaround and that this is now a good time to own a home as opposed to the way it has been, where our home values are going down and many, many people are losing their homes and are upside down on what they owe. It's a time to stop and look. And I think Paul was in a way in this reading that we just had telling the Hebrews to stop and look. Now I've been warning you about the fact that you're dull of hearing. Chapter 5 verse number 11. You're not listening like you used to. You're not listening to learn like you used to. He says, as a matter of fact, it's possible that some of you may have fallen so far that it's impossible to recover you anymore. But, he says, starting this reading, verse number 9 of the 6th chapter, he was confident of better things concerning them. He was sure that they would be different. And the reason he could say that was because they hadn't gotten to where they were dull of action yet. They were still continuing to do the things that they had done. He described the concept of thank you, the concept of their danger very, very vividly. And he wanted them to know that danger. He wanted them to understand that danger, and I think he wants us to understand the danger that's possible. But I think he also wants them to understand and wants us to understand there is a security that we can have. We sang two different songs today, Standing on the Promises, and that we have an anchor that's sure and steadfast. Those both relate to the lesson that we're delivering today. What gives us that? What do we have that we can know that we're secure? That we can know and understand that I don't need to fear. I can go to bed at night knowing that if I wake up in heaven, if I wake up in the other side of death, that I don't need to fear. What does that? That's what we're going to talk about today. Verses 9 and 10 tell us that God doesn't forget. In a way, that's a tremendously encouraging thought. Have you ever done things for people and it seems like they just ignore it? You help them out. You do things that that they may want you to do. And it just doesn't seem to make any difference whatsoever. No gratefulness there whatsoever. No understanding and no remembrance. But we serve a just God. We serve a God who does not forget. He is very much aware of the service that we do for other people. Look in verse number 9 and verse number 10. Well, number 10. God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown in His name. He says, I know what you did in the past. I know the service that you've given to me. I know the service that you've given in my name. And I know the service that you are now doing. He says, you do minister. God's eye is on us. He understands what we're doing, and He doesn't forget. He does not reject. And we can look at 2 Chronicles, the 16th chapter, in verse number 9, and says that God is strong in His loyalty to those who are loyal to Him. God will remember. I mean, we can look in Acts, the 10th chapter, and get a perfect example of that, where in the first four verses, we can see that God remembered what Cornelius had done, who was not a Christian. If He's keeping His eye on what good things that Cornelius was doing, don't you think He's keeping an eye on His own children? Don't you think He's watching out for us? When we stumble and we sin and we repent of that sin, God remembers the good that we have done and forgives us of that sin. And we can go on living that confident life because God doesn't forget. Now, we can't take advantage of that. We're told, if we go back and look at the text again, verse number 11, we desire that each one of you show the same diligence. What diligence? The same diligence that you ministered in the past and that you're ministering right now. Keep it up. Put forth the same effort, the same earnestness that you had done in the past. We can't quit. There is no retirement in Christianity. None at all. You reach 65, you can't sit back and say, all right, I want my Social Security check now. And I don't have to work anymore. I can retire. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way at all. God wants us to continue to give the same diligence all of our life that we're giving at that time. And why was he worried about that? If you look, it says, we desire that each one of you show the same diligence toward the full assurance of hope to the end, that you do not become sluggish, slothful. That's the very same word that's used up in 5:11, where it says you're dull of hearing. He didn't want them to become dull of action. The same word. Same word, you can't become dull of action. He wants us to continue to work. We dare not step back. They were already dull of hearing. They were already not what they ought to be. Don't become dull of action, Paul says. And he tells them then that they need to imitate those who faith and patience inherit the promise. It's an interesting word, that imitate. A more likely translation of it would be to mimic. You ever had somebody mimic you? Every time you say something, they say it. Every time you do something, they do it. We do that to aggravate one another once in a while, just to kind of tease one another, and it does. But Paul says we are to mimic the folks who through faith and patience inherit the promise. Look at faithful Christians and say, I need to be just like that. I need to do it exactly that way. I told you the story before about Richard Curry and his habit of
getting up and lining up the pulpit, and he always moved it. I don't care, or tried to. Sometimes you get these big, massive things that won't move, but he got up and does that every time. He looked out and straightened the pulpit before he started to preach. And I caught myself doing that. I was mimicking him because I admired him so much. I wanted to be like him. And I got up and I went, and then I started giggling at myself and saying, you're being just like Richard. You need to stop that, and then you need to stop laughing. You ever get the giggles sometimes? Well, you can't stop. Well, I actually had to turn around and and then turn back, and I was ready to go again. We need to mimic. We need to imitate those who, through patience and faith, inherit the promise. Did you hear what that said? It takes patience. It takes endurance. It takes continuation to reach heaven. Number one, you got to be patient with the preacher. You got to be patient with your brethren. You have to be patient with your family. And you know the really tough one? You have to be patient with yourself. Patient with yourself. And we need to know and understand we're not perfect. We're really not. I know some of us like to think we are, but we're not. And Paul's not the only one that talks about this. In 2 Peter, the first chapter, Peter tells us that we need to have diligence to make our calling and election sure. We need to have that patience, that endurance to make our calling and election sure. Christianity is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, most people could last if we're going to race from here out to the shed and we lined everybody up. We probably all could run. Now, if we said we're going to race from here to the Myers store down on Broad Street, bye. I don't think I probably can walk that far, let alone to run that far. We need to recognize and understand we're in a marathon. We're going to continue in this race. Peter says we make our calling and election sure. He tells us in verses 10 and 11, if we don't, then we're blind and we can't see far off and we forget that our sins are forgiven. Jesus tells us in Revelation, the second chapter, in verse number 10, that the crown of life is given to the one that endures. The one that's still there at the end, patient continuance. If we want the crown of life, we need to know baptism is not the end. Baptism is the start. All that comes up to that is the preparation. Baptism starts us on that road that leads to heaven, and we need to keep going and keep going. We're going to have some days, some weeks, some years where we go fast. And somewhere circumstances cause us to just make a little bit of advance, but we can't stop. We need to continue. And that's what those who inherit the faith did. They can't give up. We need to know and understand who we're talking about. So the writer gives us an example. He says that God made a promise to Abraham. And all the way down to the end of the chapter, what he's talking about is God keeps his promises. Have you had someone promise something to you and then not do it? How about you? Have you ever promised to somebody and then you didn't do it? Aren't you glad we don't have a God like us? That we have a God that keeps his promise. He tells us in 13 down through to about 16, God made a promise to Abraham because he could swear by no one greater. He swore by himself, saying, surely, blessing, I'll bless you. Multiplying, I'll multiply you. And so, after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. Did you hear what happened? Promise was made here. Patiently endured, he inherited over here. He didn't say to Abraham, your seed is going to cover the world. And the world's going to be blessed by it. And it happened the next day. Matter of fact, it didn't happen during Abraham's lifetime. But he was patiently enduring throughout his life. God has made a promise, and he will keep that promise. Now, he knows that sometimes people make promises and don't keep them. So he not only made a promise, he made an oath that he would keep that promise. He made an oath, he swore by himself, because there wasn't anything greater to swear by. You know, used to be when you went in the court, you put your hand on the Bible, because we recognized and understood that that's greater than I am. And I pledge to God that I'm going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Our legal system at that time recognized that God was greater than it. We made an oath. We make a promise. And because of that promise and because of that oath, we can stand on the promises. Remember the song that we just sang? We can stand on those promises. It's not shaky ground. It's firm. We can stand on those promises through problems in our life. We can stand on those promises through death. We can stand on those promises until we reach the promised land. Heaven is there. It's for us. And God's faithfulness is our assurance. I can know God cannot lie. He is righteous, and that gives us strong encouragement. Not just a, you know, I hope kind of a thing, but we can have strong encouragement. And who does it say can have that strong encouragement? Those who are seeking refuge, verse 18. We might have strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold on the hope that's set before me. That's given the picture back in the Old Testament days. They had cities of refuge, three on either side of the River Jordan. If you were accused of committing a crime, you could run to one of these cities of refuge, and as long as you stayed there, you were safe. The people who were coming to get you and trying to kill you, trying to arrest, couldn't get you as long as you stayed in the city of refuge. As long as we flee to the refuge, then we're safe. Because we have a God that keeps his promises. And that's my assurance. That's my anchor. That's sure and steadfast. That doesn't move. It's there for us. Verse 19. This hope we have is an anchor for the soul, both sure and steadfast, which enters into the presence before the veil. You drop the anchor, and it fastens on the bed of the sea or the lake or the river, and you can stand there. It's not going to move. because you see it's steadfast and sure. Oh, you can drop an anchor and it lands in some weeds or something, and you pull on it, oh, that's good, and then the wind starts pulling on it, and it just rips right out. That's not the kind of anchor we're talking about. We're talking about an anchor that's dropped down to the bed of the sea, and it's sure, it's steadfast, it's not moving. God is always there. He has provided that anchor for us, Jesus Christ, that we can seek a refuge in Him. As long as I'm with Jesus, I'm safe. As long as I'm with Him. I can remember in grade school, I had this friend who was probably a head and a half taller than anybody else in the fifth grade. Best friend. Hung around with him all the time. Never had anybody picking on me. No. My anchor, my refuge. They just didn't mess with me. Now, if he was sick, or he had to stay in the classroom and didn't get to go out at recess time, fair game. He wasn't there. And that's just like it is with us. We have an anchor that's steadfast and sure as long as we are seeking refuge with Him. When we leave Him, you're fair game for Satan. It's like, come and get me. And He will. So part of the answer to our confidence, our assurance, our security, is that we need to remain in the refuge. He's now ready to go back to what it means that Jesus has a priesthood like the priesthood of Melchizedek, and that's what he starts the seventh chapter. He stopped at the end of the fifth chapter because he said they were too dull a hearing. They needed to learn some things. He's taught them. Now he's ready to go back. And that's our lesson for next week. Our spiritual security, though, is based on the faithfulness of God, on His character, the confidence that we can have in Him. He's not unjust to forget our work, our labor of love, our service to the saints and our service in His name. He's not going to forget the promise that He made and the oath that He swore concerning the priesthood of Melchizedek. That priesthood is now in heaven, there interceding for you and I, for each of us, and it's the basis of our hope. It's the anchor that's steadfast and sure. But we have to be careful to be diligent, to be earnest, to put forth the effort. We have to be careful to imitate the faith and the patience of those like Abraham who obtained the promise. You want the promise? It's yours. Have you fled to Jesus for refuge? Or are you out there in the wilderness? Out there in danger. That's the only basis for spiritual security. The only basis. Is He your high priest? If not, who is? Who is? If you have, which most of us have, you need to listen and listen close to Hebrews 6, 11 and 12, where we are told that we desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope till the end, that you do not become sluggish, but that you imitate those who faith and patience inherit the promise. That's speaking to us. Now, if you've not yet fled to Jesus for refuge. If you've not yet considered him your high priest, then consider very carefully, if you will, what Jesus says in Matthew 11 and verse 28 and following, where he says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn of me, and you'll find rest for your soul. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Do you need to respond to that invitation today? We certainly stand ready to help in any way that we can. Please, won't you give us that opportunity? Won't you do it now, while we stand and while we sing?